Hello, is this thing on? Brian, are you there? We're dusting off the old podcast this week.
Yeah, can I do like the mic tap? I'm sure I'm just going to like destroy everything. Hold on. Wait, give one sec.
Perfect.
That sound good?
Okay, yeah.
I'm sure I've like wrecked our levels. I'd like to apologize to anyone driving. Yeah, so...
Well, your podcast dads are back. Your favorite uncles are back. The Vogue Advisory is back after an unplanned hiatus. It just kind of happened this way. We missed a couple weeks right after the championship.
You know, it was one of those things where I was just tired. I was just tired. Been very tired. It's all good. You know, semester back starting up. And I was like, oh, there's some stuff that we could talk about. There's some stuff we could talk about. And then I was like, eh. Like, yeah. You know, I think just like sitting on the couch was good, but I apologize to our devoted listeners, but
yes, you know, all 12 of you out there, it is.
Yeah.
Our condolences. Look,
we'll name you by name. Yes. I've been thinking about each and every one of y'all individually. Yes.
That's true. You've been in our hearts.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But I mean, really, like, there was nothing to say about the Sugar Bowl. There was nothing to say about the national championship. Those games were what they were. I had a moment of panic in the first quarter of the Sugar Bowl. I was like, oh no, it's happening again. I think I even texted you like, Sugar Bowl's cursed. And that was my last text to you. and
then it turned around.
And yes. Then it turned around. We just had to, get our feet wet. And then, you know, now I think it's maybe fair to ask, like, how good were we? Because TCU clearly is not the second best team in the country.
No.
Despite, you know, their run to the national championship. But, I mean, just I made it through two touchdowns of the national championship before I had to turn it off because I couldn't take any more Stetson Bennett hype for the rest of my life. I didn't need that. So I think I turned it off and watched Glass Onion right afterwards.
I'm confused because I don't know who Stetson Bennett is. I thought you were referring to the national championship game where the South Dakota State Jackrabbits finally got off the schneid, defeating the North Dakota State Bison, 45-21. You know, it was a great win. I felt really good, actually, for South Dakota State because they would beat North Dakota State every once in a while. Obviously, perennial favorites, but, you know, South Dakota State, they would beat North Dakota, but it wouldn't count. It would be like at a time where it didn't have any like actual repressions, or like they'd beat them, but then not win the national championship. So it's just a really kind of nice story and a great way to go out. So I just want to celebrate the Jackrabbits on their national championship.
Yeah. You know, they were just playing sound football there all season long, you know, for all of us Jackrabbit heads out there, you know, real ones know.
Absolutely. If you want to know your fun fact is, the South Dakota State Jackrabbits, you know, the guy's name is Mark Gronowski, which sounds like Gronkowski, as in another Gronkowski brother, but it's not. But, you know, he decided to go to South Dakota State. It was his only scholarship offer from D1. He got offered from Butler, you know, basketball powerhouse Butler,
yes.
As well as Valparaiso. But he decided, you know what, we're going to stick it out. And, you know, I just feel so, so great for him. You know, a guy that was, you know, obviously, you know, people didn't think too much about Mark Gronowski. You know, they kind of made fun of him. You know, they said that he was an old man, you know, came back, had some injuries, took a COVID year on medical red shirt. But, you know, he really, you know, stepped it up, and now he's going to open up a Subaru dealership back home in Naperville, Illinois. So, you know, hats off to him.
Hats off to him. Fun fact about Butler, my wife, Robin Hammondtree, oversees the development of their instructional design for all of their online programs. So it's a good school. They have a good online product. If you are looking for online degrees, I can recommend them strongly.
Our sponsor of the week is
our sponsor of the week is Blue Noodle.
Blue Noodle. Blue. Yeah. I'm trying to think of whatever. I don't know the name of their whatever their we now O-Tide, which is the dumbest name in the planet. But I just like, yeah, Blue Bulldog Learning. I don't know.
Exactly.
E-Dog.
E-Dog. E-Butler. If it's not E-Dog, I'll tell Robin that it should be E-Dog.
Tell Robin. We know somebody who can at least change the entire UX experience where it's now called E-Dog. I had a lovely time in Butler. I gave a reading there. They have a writer's house. It's a nice little, it's a very cool writer's house area. And they actually do, they used to do like a writer's carnival. So they would do like a reading, but it would also have like a bouncy house and like rides and stuff that. It was really neat. It was a really kind of cool thing. I didn't go for that. I gave a reading, but they wanted a non-traditional reading. So I did like a DJ set plus reading. And I had a really wonderful time. It's a nice place. I made them take me to Hinkey Field House, so I got to see the actual thing, and so that was really fun. That's a common theme for me. I was tweeted this out the other day where I had a job talk at Northern Michigan University, and that is where the Superior Dome is located, which is a wooden dome, like it's a football field, but it's like there's only like three wooden domes.
Wow.
And I made like the poor Shakespeare scholar. I was like, can I go see the Superior Dome? And he's like, it's like kind of a gym. It's like a rec center right now. Like there's not a football field. I was like, can I just like go see it? He's like, yeah, I guess so. So I made this poor Shakespeare scholar, Renaissance scholar, take me to go see the dome. And yeah, it was great. I was like, wow, look at this. And sure enough, there were like people running around the track. The same way we went to Hinkey Fieldhouse, there was people who were playing volleyball. So, you know, multi-purpose spaces.
Well, if you are listening to the Fog Advisory right now and you have an interesting dome or arena or just a multi-purpose center, let us know and Brian will come tour and review your facilities and we will feature it on a future episode of Fog Advisory.
Yeah, if you have a quirky court, you know, if there's a weird kind of a dimensional thing that's going on in your football stadium, or even just like a dome on campus, please let me know. I am going to be there, and you know, I'll see if I can secure funding. You might just even have to just give me some money for a meal. I might get a per diem, so you might not have to worry about that, but just invite me. I'll be there.
Especially if there's a lower tier bowl game happening nearby, we can apply for credentials and
then sure can.
Fog Advisory will be well represented.
I want to take a moment. I want to shout out my friend Terry Horseman. I don't know how much crossover we may have with the Oregon State football / collegiate community. But my friend Terry Horseman hosts a podcast about Oregon State sports. And inspired by my Birmingham Bowl escapades, he applied for media credentials for the Senior Bowl. So I think he's flying to Mobile.
Okay.
You know, he's currently in Minnesota, but I think he's going to Mobile to go to the Senior Bowl. So you too, if you have a regional podcast, I highly recommend seeing if you can go to some relatively low stakes athletic competitions.
I recommend trying high stakes athletic competitions. I think we need to apply for credentials for the March Madness games here in Birmingham.
Oh, that's a really smart idea.
Like, I mean,
just give it a shot.
Yeah, you know, we're going to talk about basketball later on this Basketball Only Gumps podcast. You know, it's worth a shot.
I'd like. There's a Twitter thread going around which I really like. Which is like, what's the smallest grift you run? Like we all have like a very small grift, and I felt like that was a really good one. I really enjoyed like, yeah, what's the smallest grift that you run?
So I think there's a certain party here in Alabama who will remain nameless, but he's got a certain grift down pat. Today his grift was just going and taking a live streaming video of Bear Bryant's grave and posting an inspirational status with it and uploading it to Twitter. And you know, it won't take a whole lot of sleuthing to figure out who this party is, because this is his grift. And he does it all the time. And yet, you know, it works, I guess.
The people of Facebook love it.
The people of Twitter send it to each other and groan. But I do have a question for you, Brian. Do you think
okay.
We finished the season? Like, I mean, were we a top three team this season? I feel like It's close. I don't think TCU actually was. I think that it was a fluky game where they got in over Michigan and Ohio State. But I think reasonably that the championship game probably should have been Georgia, Michigan. And I think Georgia still would have walloped them. But we spent a lot of this podcast season being a little bit down on ourselves because we weren't playing up to that standard that Saban talks about. But I think we may have been. That's my take, at least.
I think so, too. You know, like I said, our biggest critic is always ourselves, right? We're always judging ourselves against previous Alabama teams. We're always judging ourselves against perfection, about just like demoralizing the other team. But, you know, I think of even like last year's team, where everyone was very down on last year's team, and that team what led in the fourth quarter of a national championship game, right? Right. And this team, I think, was slightly worse. I mean, I think they were more tested. They were more battle tested because the teams were a lot better. Whether it was Tennessee playing particularly well, whether it was LSU kind of playing particularly well. But I think we were absolutely a top three team. I think, you know, did we deserve to be in? That's a question for other people to debate. And they have 100 times over. But, you know, you can say all of those teams that got in deserve to be there.
Yeah, but I agree with that.
And the great lines of The Wire season 4, deserve ain't got nothing to do with it. and so, you know, that's kind of a thing I keep coming back to. I was like, yeah, TCU absolutely deserve to be there. They should be there. Does it mean that they got walloped? Yeah. And, you know, especially like at least conversation with this Michigan thing, like, I think Michigan's, it's funny because it's Michigan, right? Their hubris just like destroyed them. They thought they got beat up by us, right? So they got beat up. You know, that was 2 years ago, right? And then they went to the playoff last year and lost, and they were like, oh, now we've got our like feet wet, right? Like this Jim Harbaugh thing where he's like, now we know what's up. Now we're kind of where we need to be. You know, now we're battle tested. We've tasted what the playoff is like, and now we're playing TCU. And I think they thought they were going to waltz in there and walk all over them. And then all next thing you know, they're down whatever 20 points early, and they have to kind of crawl their way back, which they do in a great game. But I think, you know, there's no reason why they should have lost that game. There's absolutely no reason they should have lost that game.
Yeah.
And then Ohio State, obviously, Ohio State plays really well when you give them time. You know, if you give Ryan Day like time to game plan, you know, I think he's one of the best like one game coaches, which is why the NFL is interested in him, right? He's a great one game coach. He's a great play caller. If that's the only thing he has to focus on for like that one entire week, but you know, the week to week stuff, he kind of is a little jittery. So they played a great, had a great game plan for Georgia as well. And you know, it just kind of landed in that fact, but like, yeah, I mean, you said how much you watched the game. I went back and forth. So I was originally going to go to Monday Night Raw in beautiful Birmingham, Alabama. That was my game plan. I was super planning on it. And then like last minute, I was like, you know, again, tired. Same thing with the podcast. Like, I'm tired. I was like, I need to go to rest. So let me do that. And I was like, and maybe something could happen in this football game. And honestly, I was like doing something else. I was like wrapping something up or like doing some work. And I like had the game, like I was just like checking the score on my phone. And I saw it got to like 14-0 and then 14-7. And I was like just about to turn it on. And then it went to like 21-7, like quickly. And I was like, oh, this game's over. And then I honestly didn't watch a snap. I didn't watch any of it.
I think coming out of the two playoff games, it was like, oh shit, like this is the year the experiment worked. We had two great playoff games.
And that
just hadn't happened yet. And then of course, you know, the championship is a dud. And so, you know, I had a debate with some of my friends about like, well, what's like the best possible system? Because like, you know, you start to get nostalgic for stuff, even though the BCS like clearly had problems, and it had plenty of games, or even though it was number one versus number two, that game ended up being as unbalanced as this game was. And so like, I don't really know what the perfect system is to guarantee or come close to guaranteeing that you have the best two teams facing off each other in the final, against each other in the final game. Because like the most fun tournament in sports is March Madness. But March Madness is fun because it's almost guaranteed that it's not going to be the best two teams facing each other. It's right. just whoever gets hot. I think, you know, I argued that like something like the NBA where you have a best of seven series, which obviously wouldn't be tenable in football, but like at least you're starting to like separate the wheat from the chaff, so to speak, in that stuff. But I mean, you know, the most fun tournaments are World Cup, NCAA tournament, like stuff where anything can happen. And I, you know, I think Goliath versus Goliath is not the most fun thing to watch. You know, if you want right. to watch David versus Goliath, unless it's Goliath, you know, smashing horned frogs into the ground.
Right. And I think that's an interesting thing. I think obviously as Alabama fans, where we are at the top of the sport and we will remain at the top echelon of the sport, we don't want these variants. Like we don't want a like caught fire, you know, a Utah team that might have started the season, you know, 1-2. And then all of a sudden have won 10-9 straight to like get into the playoff as like a 8 seed or whatever. Like that's a nightmare. Like yeah. we don't want to deal with that whatsoever. And so like, as much as we want to protect ourselves, I agree. It's like, but it's hard because I think of, again, we as a, I mean, here, this is, I mean, everyone knows the case, but like they care about making the most money, yeah. right? Like that's what it is. It's not about equality of play. It's not about a great fan experience. It's about making the most money. Now, thankfully, the March Madness is a great fan experience. It's like one of the best, most fun things on the planet. I love every aspect of it. I think it's wonderful. If I was a fan of, not to knock Alabama blue blood basketball team, but like if I was a fan of Kentucky or Kansas or North Carolina or even Duke, I would hate that tournament. Because you're like, we're clearly the best team. We're really, really good. We have all these things together. And now we have to go through a gauntlet that's like entirely separate in a lot of ways from the season prior to it. Now, like, I obviously like college basketball is very temporal in a lot of ways, right? It's a lot of one and done. It's a lot of kind of, you know, teams are here for one season and then completely disappear and retool for the next season. And so I get kind of like the fleetingness of it all and like catching. It's like the one shining moment, right? It's like it's truly there in a blink of an eye and gone in this momental thing. But like, you know, football is a little bit more of a churn. There's a little bit more of continuity. Obviously, with the portal, it's changed some things. So, you know, I don't know. I think like it's funny because the top's always going to be the top. And I think what's frustrating to a casual fan of college football is you can pretty much predict the champion at the beginning of a season. Now, fortunately, yeah. it's us a lot of the time. But, you know, and so I think people find a lot of joy in college football in like the little nuances and the little weirdness of it all. I mean, we might inevitably find ourselves in a position where we're watching college football and that top echelon is separate. And you know, are almost like a Champions League type thing in soccer, right? Where it's like, oh, here's the top teams and they're all going to beat each other up and they're all kind of like certified in some sort of way. But, yeah, I think we're going to continue to get those kind of lopsided championship games. I think they're unavoidable. I think they're difficult to kind of track down, whether that's a championship game or in those quarterfinals, or we're going to get some really lopsided, you know, semifinal or like these, if we expand, which we're certainly seems like we're going to do, I think we're still going to get some matchups where someone's going to get absolutely smashed and, you know, so I don't know. I don't think there's any particular way to think about it. The one I think I keep coming back to is, you know, if now these programs can pitch athletes on the fact that there's a path, you know, that we're a playoff team, right? Come play with us. You'll be in the mix every year. That's something that not many teams can guarantee. Mm-hmm. So now even if you're, I don't know, someone like, God forbid, Tennessee or something like that, or, you know, a team that's the second best team in the Big 12 or a Pac-12 team, you can say, hey, we're going to be there.
Right. We have a path.
We have a path. And I think that might pull some players from other places, as opposed to being like, oh, I just want to win a national championship. I want to at least be part of that whole playoff experience. You know, you're able to kind of point to that stuff. So that might change some things. We'll see. I still think the rich are just going to get richer, and that's what's going to happen. We might let some more people into the rich kid club. I think honestly might be the best possible thing, where maybe someone pointed this thing out, which I kind of liked, was like, there's, was it like royalty and nobility, right? Like there's college football royalty,
yeah.
But there's also college football nobility. And so maybe that, I like that nobility concept. So these teams that are might not there, but like, oh, they're nobility. So they're kind of on the outskirts. And then, you know, it is always nice to kind of have a Cincinnati. We say, oh, it's good for the sport. Or it's like, oh, it is. We have TCU. Oh, it's good for the sport. And it was good for the sport until they get shellacked.
Yeah.
Like the game where they have the most eyes.
But it still fuels the content farm where, you know, here we are 2 weeks later and we're discussing, you know, should they have been there? And so.
Right. Absolutely.
And sometimes you have royalty and they can't pay their bills, like Florida. With Jaden Rashada, yes. and they lose out on their opportunity with some of these players. I like that you mentioned phenomenal. Soccer, because I think that like soccer is an interesting thing where, like, you know, teams win tournaments and that affects their overall ranking in the sport. But it's not like, all right, you know, you know, Argentina is now the best team in soccer. I mean, they are, but like it affects your ranking, just like in tennis, you know, like you win Wimbledon and right. It affects your ranking in tennis. And I think maybe in college football, it's just like, all right, like perennial. And maybe this is like effectively how the AP works anyways, because they do all the preseason yeah. rankings and stuff. But like, you know, you win certain tournaments, you do yada, yada, yada. And, you know, you find yourself at the top of the heap year in and year out. And I think that's where kind of the Royals will be, you know, if they do have the royalty and nobility thing, then we can all put a lot of Lord in our rotation at Bryant Denny.
yeah, we should do that anyway. You know, I think yeah, Green Light would go hard. Any Lord song I think would work really nice. Anything, honestly, give me anything.
That's true. If you are out there listening, Fog Faithful, write to Alabama and demand for Brian to be the DJ next season,
please.
Or Lacey, I would friend in the pod,
Lacey. Or Lacey. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. We could tag team it. It'd be great.
But you know, we're now I guess 20 odd minutes into the show, and we should discuss the legitimate news. The reason why we decided to podcast this week. Bill O'Brien and Pete Golding are both gone. We are starting over.
Who? Those guys?
We are the dog that caught the car. So I'm very excited to see what happens next, and I wish them well. The Pete Golding one was a head scratcher for me. Going yeah, to Ole Miss, but he must have just really hated it here, or felt like he was not going to be here much longer. I don't really know.
I at least from stuff I've picked up is that, you know, I apparently Saban wanted him to stay, but it was like anything else. There's like no room for growth, right? I mean, like, what's Pete Golding's ceiling, right? Like, yeah. I think Nick Saban really likes. I mean, that's what they've said, is that he loves being kind of the coach whisperer. He likes building folks up. He likes kind of rehabbing coaches. Now, obviously, Golding was like one of his as a homegrown guy, and one that he hasn't had for a while. He plucked him from UTSA, right? So, you know, here's a guy that he kind of built up and worked his way up. And, you know, at some point you have to let the bird fly, right? And Pete Golding, I think, was happy just kind of hang out in the nest. I think he was just kind of happy to hang out. And
he had to get pushed out of the nest? Is that what you're saying?
I think he got a little pushed out of the nest, right? Okay. I don't think any – I mean, the problem is that no jobs called for Pete Golding, right? I don't know. He doesn't seem like head coaching material in a lot of ways, you know, even at a G5 level. I think, you know, there was always a moment of him being Louisiana, taking one of those Louisiana jobs, but those are getting more and more appealing, whether it's La Tech, whether it's Louisiana Monroe, whether it's Louisiana University of Louisiana, Lafayette, depending on who we're talking about. But I think, you know, I think there was never an opportunity for him to like make that head coaching leap. And so he just kind of was like, oh, I'm happy just being defensive coordinator, because like that's the only place you can really go, right? You can kind of make, or you make a lateral move, but like, I think, you know, speaking as myself, right, I've had certain moments in jobs where I'm like, well, I don't want to make a lateral move. Like, you know, like, I don't think there's any real purpose to that.
Right.
Yeah, I think that's kind of where we wound up with him. And then Lane comes calling and says, and I think God is blessing. I think Nick Saban said, yeah, man, go. I think it was written in the cards for a while that we were going to have a complete turnover. That had been whispers, I think, for a while. I think Pete Golding to Ole Miss didn't surprise me. Him leaving, I don't think Nick was ever going to fire him. He was never going to be like fired. But I think there was definitely a moment where you'd be like, oh, that'd be a really good opportunity for you. Right. Yeah. I was like, I'll write you a heck of a recommendation letter. Right. I think it was one of those. I think it really was one of those. And I think that works out well for him. You know, he's an excellent recruiter. I think I hinted to this now that he's gone. Right. I had an opportunity. I had lunch with him at like a event thing. And I tell you what, I was like, oh, I get it. You know, he's incredibly charming. He's really good with student athletes. He's really good with parents. He's really good with everyone he meets. Super personable. Ask me questions. Doesn't know me from anything. Found ways to engage with me. Found ways to talk about like literature. Self-deprecating. You know, just a guy that makes you feel really comfortable and comfortable that you're like, yeah, I could send my 18-year-old to go like play for this guy. This guy's going to be taking care of this guy. So I get it. It was one of those moments like, okay, sure. His play calling might drive me bonkers, but I was like, I could see why you want a guy like this around, and you can see why, you know, the student athletes really kind of take to him. So I think he'll do fine there. I think he'll do totally fine. The only problem is like working for Lane Kiffin sounds like kind of a recipe for your own disaster, because it's never Lane's fault, right? So it could be interesting.
I hope that Lane just builds out an entire staff of people that look like a fraternity composite photo.
Yes, absolutely. Oh my God. Yeah. He's going. Yeah. Who else is he? I'm trying to think of the most like frat bro, you know, I mean, Cliff Kingsbury, right? You could kind of see him. He's an archetype, right?
But that's right.
You know, cause you got the Pete Golding, like party dude, you know, Lane himself kind of has it.
Slot like Harbaugh into like, he's like the serious, like, you know, like chapter Derek president. Dooley. Yeah. Oh yeah. Derek Dooley for sure.
Derek Dooley would be good. I know that'd be our most frat bro coordinator search.
Like, yeah. You know. Kirby honestly has,
he like, does
the angry frat bro look to him.
Yeah,
for sure. For sure. Yeah. That's our question of the week. Help us put together the all frat bro composite photo roster by tweeting
tweeting. And it doesn't mean they have to be a fraternity bro, because I mean, half these guys were student athletes.
And yeah,
They were not involved in these extracurriculars. But
you know it when you see it. You get
the look. You can put it on the walking into you know, an esteemed building on UA campus and having that big ass like placard thing with the pictures, you know, you could just, yeah, like looking at the Overlook Hotel photo, like who's a who's who of offensive and defensive minds that have the aesthetic that folks are looking for.
Bonus points if you tell us what fraternity they would be in. So
I mean, look, our most popular episode ever. We got it. You know, this is the spinoff. Here it is.
That's right.
It's the off-season, yeah. People.
We'll have the quarterbacks and sororities and the coaches in fraternities. So
coaches in fraternities. Yes, I know. We're the fraternity expert on. I mean, yeah.
And then, of course, you know, pour one out for Bill O'Brien, because you know, bless his heart, he's on to bigger and better things. And leaving us poor folk behind.
I think now that he's gone, I think we treated him poorly, but it was time for him to go. I think I used the Catalan saying, which is new boat in a good wind, you know, which is essentially good riddance, but also like kind of a nice, like, you know, new boat in a good wind. You know, that's kind of how I feel. Like, And it was funny. I got a text from my buddy, Matt, who is from Massachusetts and, you know, a Patriots fan. And he's like, my entire Twitter feed is like Alabama fans celebrating and New England fans celebrating. So I think it's a net positive. I think it works really well for all folks involved. You know, I think he'll enjoy being back in the NFL. Obviously, the way he schemed was very NFL-esque, you know, which is just kind of anticipating that our guys are better than your guys, and we're just going to kind of line them up and see what happens. And, you know, obviously in college, we need a little bit more scheme. We need a little bit more, you know, teaching some route trees, whether it is or, you know, being a little bit more innovative instead of just like 11 on 11 stuff. So I think he'll do fine. I think him and Mac Jones will have a grand old time joking about how Nick Saban did X and Nick Saban did Y. And I think it'll be, I wish him nothing but the best. How about that? I wish him nothing but the best. And I hope he has fun.
Yeah. And you know, I mean, sometimes things just aren't perfect fits. Like, I mean, you know, Saban was not a perfect fit in the NFL.
Right.
And like, you know, I did not love Brian Daboll, but he, you know, was a coach of the year candidate for New York Giants and then was vanquished as part of Jalen Hurts' hero's journey. But, you know, but I mean, like, he seems to have found himself in a great spot. He is a good head coach for the New York Giants. And, you know, I did not love his play calling at Alabama. And I think that he clearly wasn't the right coach for Jalen, other than, you know, it all seems to be motivation fuel for Jalen. And maybe he wouldn't be, you know, an MVP candidate had he not gone through all of that. I don't know. It's hard to say. Kevin Skarbinski had a column this week where he basically, you know, I mean, we have this debate all the time, but, you know, was Saban right to bench Jalen for Tua when he did? And, you know, his argument is basically he ran into this former NFL quarterback who was a quarterback's coach. And this guy who he doesn't name was basically just like, you know, like Jalen was it. Jalen was always it. I could tell he was it, which I think is probably a little bit revisionist history. I'm a Jalen Hurts day one. I love Jalen. But I also say, like, you know, like nobody thought he was going to be what he has become in 2019. In 2019, if you emerged from a time machine in July of 2019 and you told yourself that in just, what, 4 years, Joe Burrow and Jalen Hurts would be one game away from a Super Bowl, like, you know, nobody would have believed it. And so
no.
I think it's been fun for me. I've loved seeing Jalen become what he's become. But I think, you know, I think quote unquote Mamba mentality is one of the most like overhyped things in all of sports. But I think that there's a little bit of that that had to happen here where he had to have the kind of chip on his shoulder to grind and get better. And that might not have happened if he had, you know, started four straight seasons at Alabama.
Hustle and grind. So my favorite line about Jalen Hurts, and I don't remember who said it, but it was like, here's a guy that has gotten 5% better every year. And for some people, they're like, for some fans and some like coaching bases, like that is not good enough, right? Which is like hilarious to me, because obviously if you said, 2019, you know, to today, right? He's 20% better than what he was, and he was already pretty, pretty damn good. But if you think about it, he got better each and every year. The Jalen Hurts that, you know, won us that SEC championship game, you know, didn't exist the year before. You know,
he had been, you know, SEC player of the year. I mean, offensive player of the year. So, you know, it's not like he came in as a slouch.
But there's definitely some revisionist history, because there are definitely a lot of, and maybe you could talk about Dable, kind of that whole mentality where, you know, he made him throw the ball a lot. And it wasn't, now it's a strength of his, but he threw the ball a lot. And I remember, you know, that was run the ball. That was run the damn ball. That was all that entire season was run the damn ball.
Yeah.
And you know, that's people again forget that.
People right.
forget that concept.
Well, because Philly has figured out how to use him, and maybe this will fall apart someday, but like use him better than anybody, which is to force defenses to, you know, play true 11 on 11 and account for him in the run game. And then, you know, it helps to have A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith to throw to and Dallas Goedert. And so, you know, but, you know, him versus D'Amico Ryan's, you know, that's going to be a fun game to watch this week. And then we potentially do get a Jalen versus Burrow Super Bowl. And that'll be fun for a lot of Alabama and LSU fans, I think.
Oh, yeah, that'd be great. I mean, yeah, you're going to start seeing it'll be very fun. But I'm just imagining like the terrible national media.
Oh, yeah.
Like talking about college football, like, and just getting it all wrong and everyone getting really mad. And it's going to be great.
So it'll be the Jalen versus Brock Purdy articles that we've seen all week, like on steroids, for sure. Oh, my God.
Yes. And how Nick Saban disrespected Brock Purdy. We're like, well, Brock Purdy kind of sucks. Like, he's not it. And
he still got an offer from us. So, like, it couldn't have been that disrespectful. So, yeah.
Right? Like, you know, and that's what coaches do. They're like, oh, you're blank. Here are all your shortcomings. This is what we're going to do to help you work on it. Like, that's common coach stuff, but you know, obviously people are going to, you know, you need the factor, the like the mama mentality, you know, enraged, you know, no one believed in us factor, right? Like that was, you need the Kirby Smart, you know, mentality of like, well, no one believed in us this year. You're like, okay. And we do it too. And that's kind
of
how,
of course,
that's,
yeah.
You know, that's the thing. You have to manufacture grievance wherever you can. And, you know, he's done a really great job of it. So yeah, I'm interested. I'm interested what happens. NFL championship games are always weird. They never go the way I think they're going to go. So we're having this like delightful conversation, and we could like easily get, you know, I don't know, we could easily get another San Francisco win, which just seems like highly unlikely, but it might happen.
If San Francisco wins, then D'Amico is going to get paid serious money next year, already should, and as he already will,
right?
You know, and I've seen a lot of speculation pairing him with your Colts. You know, your Indianapolis Colts could conceivably have him as their head coach and Bryce Young as their quarterback. That world exists. That timeline exists.
that timeline does exist, and the fact, like, it makes me mad because it does exist, and it's definitely not going to happen. I'm going to live in a Will Levis, Jeff Saturday like world, and I'm setting myself up for disappointment. Let's just say that. But it'll be fun. I think like anything's type of fun. You know, I like the NFL. I've actually probably watched more NFL this year just because we have like a kid, and I just kind of like sit down on the floor, and I have like a fun little chair that I just like sit in, and we just like, he like rolls around and stuff. So on Sunday, I turn on Red Zone. So I've watched a lot of NFL football this year. And I know folks, Alabama folks, they get so wrapped up in like busts or like guys doing well or other guys not doing well, or this guy actually was this. And I'm like, well, to me, it's just, they're two entirely separate worlds. You know, great college. It's like, you're a college football player. You graduate. For me, especially since I know my students, like, go get paid. Like, that's what I always say. Like, you did it. Your job here is done. You fulfilled what you need to do. You don't have to do anything else in your life. You don't have to go be great in the NFL. You don't have to do that. Like, collect your check. If you get a second contract, awesome. Now you're completely set for life and you don't have to worry about anything. But, you know, people debate over like, oh, this guy's a pro. But at the same time, it's fun. You know, it's nice to see some guys that we did very much love. Right. You know, obviously, it's been really fun to see Devontae Smith play really well and be as good as we've told everyone he was. You know, and I think that's part of it, is being able to say, see, I told you he's really good. And it's like, well, the NFL, it's entirely separate mentality whatsoever. But, you know, I think it's nice to kind of see your guys kind of grow up, right? Like to see those folks play well, to do cool things, kind of keep tabs on them. And so it's cool to be able to see, you know, that on a big stage. And so I think, he's gained a lot of, I think the Eagles have gained a lot of fans, right? Just because, you know, everyone loved Jalen, and everyone loves Devontae Smith, and Landon, don't rule out Landon Dickerson, you know?
And Josh Jobe, he's there too.
And Josh Jobe. Oh, yeah, Josh Jobe made the roster. Josh Jobe, yes, he's there.
He's there.
And Josh Jobe, yeah.
Yeah,
I feel like if we just did like a sitcom opening, you know, and like we feature all these things, like, and then if you know, also starring Josh Jobe, yeah,
with an exclamation point, of course,
right? Yeah, exactly.
it's just the Jeb logo from Jeb Bush's campaign, but it says Jobe.
Oh my God, Josh Jobe.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. I mean, and it has been more fun to watch the NFL because of all of those Alabama connections. Because, like,
yeah,
no matter who's facing each other, you can basically say, like, all right, how many Alabama guys are on this squad and how many are on that squad? And let that be your guiding light. So
I meant to look up, does Kansas City, I feel like, again, we're going to shout out Bama Pro Updates, but who do they have? Do they have anyone from ours? I don't think so. Garrett, what's his name? Dieter, retired.
Yeah, and I mean,
Derek Thomas is a classic. Slade Bolden worked out for the Kansas City Chiefs.
Okay,
but that might be it.
I'm just looking forward to the point when both Travis and Jason Kelce have retired, and they do their own alternate telecast alongside the Manning cast. And I would pick the Kelce cast every single time. I think
every single time those guys are just. Delightful doofuses.
They're so great.
They're so good. I guess this is an outdated roster.
I don't. Who are you talking about?
I'm just trying to see if anyone on the on the Chiefs. What Alabama players are on the Chiefs?
I don't think like there is.
They drafted like Reggie Ragland. They put like Reggie Ragland. I was like Reggie Ragland's not on the team anymore. They do have an Auburn player. Gross.
Yeah, I saw that.
Practice squad.
So no, Ramsey Robinson is the player engagement coordinator for the Kansas City Chiefs. I interviewed him a couple years ago, and he's an incredibly nice guy. And he works in the office for the Chiefs. He's kind of a player advocate, and he's a really cool dude.
That's nice.
And he was Mr. Irrelevant in the 2007 draft. So. You know, he has a kinship with Brock Purdy, I guess. But yeah. So he's there. So, you know, you can
we're giving all these NFL beat writers so many great storylines, right? Like we're really scraping the bottom of the barrel to really get you these storylines. I mean, obviously I imagine there's Kansas City Chiefs fans because of Derek Thomas, right? Like at that connection where if you were an Alabama fan, you followed Derek Thomas to the Chiefs, but
and there was a period where the Chiefs were basically just like an SEC all-star squad terms of defense, yes. And that was a lot of fun. So, you know, I guess we've gotten far afield from our mandate on this podcast. So back to who do you think, I mean, in an ideal world, who comes in and replaces Pete and Bill?
Who? Pete, I think, is a little bit more cut and dry. I think dear friend Jeremy Pruitt, I think, is probably it. In my mind, I've kind of heard, and this has been, I think, confirmed by a couple outside sources, but Aaron Suttles had it first. So obviously, Aaron Suttles has everything first. Don't believe anything until Aaron says it.
Unless it's on AL.com first, in which case, shout out to AL.com.
Unless it's on AL.com. Yes, those guys too. They're pretty good. I've heard nice things about AL.com. So I if you don't hear from, how about that? If you don't hear from AL.com or for Aaron, it's not true. But
we can agree on that.
There it is. Yes. I think he did clear kind of SEC stuff. You know, he does have some transgressions. So, you know, if you remember our dear friend Jeremy Pruitt, you know, they had a couple of sanctions against him. There was a 108-page response from Tennessee because they had a notice of allegations, so on and so forth. Jeremy Pruitt famously gave a player's mother either $300 or $400 in a Chick-fil-A bag during a meet on campus. It was a Chick-fil-A bag. This was originally reported as a McDonald's bag, but we had some good reporting that said it was a Chick-fil-A bag.
It should be one of those Chick-fil-A commercials where they're sitting side by side on a couch and they're relating like the Chick-fil-A heartwarming story. I would watch that commercial.
I like to imagine Jeremy Pruitt saying like "my pleasure" when he like hands over the bag of $300. yeah, absolutely. Just come with like Polynesian sauce. He kind of says, "Hey, it was the right thing to do, the human thing to do, the right thing to do," right? Which is like a pretty funny line. I guess his wife also provided some money too. At the end of the day, it was about $60,000 in cash, and various gifts to players and their families. The great thing, of course, because it's Tennessee. Tennessee claimed that he did this all by himself, and they had no knowledge of anything. And that Jeremy Pruitt was an evil mastermind that really was behind the scenes. And look, Jeremy Pruitt's a lot of things. A evil, diabolical, Taylor Swift-level mastermind is not one of them.
Yeah. And all this is so basically legal now, so who cares?
And it's all legal, so who cares? Who cares? Yeah, you get an NIL deal with the Chick-fil-A.
Yeah, secure the Chick-fil-A bag.
You get $400. Like, that player can go ahead and turn around and get an NIL deal from Chick-fil-A. And yeah, it would be a great NIL deal thing to be like, oh yeah, that's, you know, oh yeah, I received my money in a Chick-fil-A bag because, you know, Chick-fil-A, obviously, you know, there's Chick-fil-A's everywhere and we knew we could get it. Great service and blah, 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 blah. So,
sponsored by Chick-fil-A and the Fellowship of Christian Athletes, and bam, you are set for life, brother.
Oh my God. Absolutely. Like, You know, I think what you will about Chick-fil-A, but if Chick-fil-A offers you an NIL deal, if you're a student athlete out there listening, just take it. Take their money.
Take it.
And donate like 20% to your local LGBTQ community. But yeah, so I think it's been cleared. Apparently it's up to Saban whether he wants to bring him in. I think he will bring him in. The question, of course, is that, do you bring him in as coordinator or do you bring him in as an analyst? The other issue is like, if you bring him in as an analyst, like a young coordinator, like that's a little strange because you imagine he doesn't want to do that job, right? Like, I think it's difficult if you want to bring in, you know, a hotshot young coordinator. Hopefully not Todd Grantham is on our staff, but, you know, you want to bring in a guy and then have Pruitt kind of underneath him. And I don't think Pruitt would do anything to kind of like, you know, usurp power. But at the same time, I don't know if he would necessarily want to do that, especially if he's expected, if this new, especially as we talk so much about Saban, we're talking about Saban kind of securing his legacy and reaching a time where we're going to try to get people in that are going to be here for the inevitable transition when he retires. We might still be one cycle out, but you have to think we're thinking about that thing. And so I don't know if Jeremy Pruitt wants to like hang around that long. So to me, he seems like the choice that was going to happen. I could see that. I think that's kind of my guess.
I
don't know what you were thinking, but
no, I buy that. What about offensive coordinator? What do you think there?
Offense where I have no idea.
So
I heard from sources, someone who I do trust in terms of a source, that they're saying Jeff Lebby, who is currently the offensive coordinator at Oklahoma. He was kind of under Lane Kiffin. You know, he worked under Josh Heupel. So it would kind of make sense in terms of how Saban works, because when he gets beat by something, he goes and like obtains it, right? Like,
sure,
you know, so obviously Heupel's offense kind of diced us. And so let me go get a guy who knows Heupel's offense if this is the future of the sport, which to be honest, I don't think it is. I think Heupel's kind of game might kind of short out. But in the same way that these coordinators, sometimes they kind of evolve, right? So they kind of do new wrinkles on old techniques. And so I think that's why people try to find somebody who is a scheme genius, and then kind of find the people underneath them, because they're like, oh, I've learned this from the best, but now let me put my little pizzazz in it, right? So I think that's that's kind of what we're trying to look for. So that's a chance. The thing is, he's only been there for 1 year. He's been at Oklahoma. He did go to Oklahoma and he played at Oklahoma and kind of started off there. So I imagine it'll be a little difficult to kind of pull him away. We also can't really talk about him because he's, you know, without mentioning that he's mixed up in the Art Briles nonsense over at Baylor, the whole football scandal over there. He is married to Art Briles' daughter.
Okay.
So he is Art Briles' son-in-law and kind of defended his father-in-law. You know, I don't know, but that was over 8 years ago. And, you know, I understand that people change and whatnot, but yeah, that's a tough pill to swallow a little bit, that was kind of what he was doing. So, you know, essentially you want to avoid anyone kind of involved with Baylor at any moment during the mid, or during the late 2000s.
Yeah.
So I can see that kind of being a little detrimental towards that. So maybe that's not why. I mean, my feeling of all of these coaches, I mean, it's the same thing we like talked about Hugh Freeze with Dar, like, you don't need him. You know, there's so many guys that do what he does that you can just go get a guy, like, go get the dude's best friend, right? Like,
which
is the mentality of Briles. So you're like, oh, you don't need our Briles anymore because he sucks. Like, go get his kid. Or, and then it's like, well, his kid's wrapped up, and go get the guy who worked with his kid, right? So it's like, okay, you can get someone from that coaching tree without having to like get the guy who's a little bit problematic. So, you know, this is kind of a weird little thing for him. I was told that he's the guy, but it does seem like a little bit of a leap. But at the same time, I think none of these things happen. Like these decisions have already been made. We're talking now on Thursday, January 26th. I guarantee you that Nick Saban already has a defense coordinator lined up and already has an offense coordinator.
Yeah.
It's just a question of who it is and who is going to stumble into them when they go to the Alamite Hotel Forte bar and just so happens to turn the corner and run into a well-tanned, back from Thailand, Cliff Kingsbury.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Like, you know, I mean, you have some of these things where it's like, you know, maybe you wait to see how some of the NFL coaching stuff shakes out and all of that. But because I mean, I do think, like, as a fan base, we've gotten used to like, oh, well, we'll just go pluck, you know, Cliff Kingsbury or Scott Frost or somebody like, you know, who's down on their luck because like we're Alabama and we can do whatever we want. And we, you know, we turn head coaches into coordinators. And so it would be interesting to see if that's not what happens this go around.
I think, you know, it's so funny. I put this in the show notes just because it drives me crazy, but it's just like, we talked about like Aaron Sells, we talked to AL.com, Michael Cascarano, like all these great folks who are very good at what they do in terms of their beat reporting. But, you know, there's the flattening, and you're obviously been in journalism, but there's like the flattening of media, right? Where anyone can claim that they're an Alabama insider without having a journalistic integrity, right? Without being tied to, you know, not making shit up, or tied to, what's all the people say, I think, I feel, I know, right? Like trying to hedge your bets, being like, oh, I feel this, or I think this, or zeroing in on, you know, are these things that we can't officially say it from our outlet because that's something. Meanwhile, somebody who has a blog or a podcast, Fog Advisory, could just be like, I heard that it's this, so it's definitely gonna be this. And we're wrong, who cares, right? There's no journalistic integrity. So you hear these rumors and they just aggregate constantly. Like, I'm gonna shout something out. So one of the names that's going around is Greg Roman. And Greg Roman is the former offense coordinator of the Baltimore Ravens. Now, this rumor was started in a group chat that I know, that I'm a part of, that they're like, we are going to float this idea of Greg Roman to Alabama. We're going to make it up. And it's now he's on the list. Like, you look, you search for Alabama offense coordinator, and like every person that's not like an NFL meet, not like an official journalist or just like someone's speculating he's on the list. They're like, Greg, outside chance, Greg Roman. Like, you,
I mean, sources are saying, Brian, that, you know,
sources are saying, hold on, I'm gonna pick. All right, let's see. Who is an offensive coordinator that we can start pushing? Charlie Weiss Jr. Okay, sure. let's say Charlie Weiss Jr. I've heard whispers.
Yeah, Fog Advisory can officially report that we have heard rumors about Charlie Weiss Jr. too.
I've heard rumblings about Charlie Weiss Jr. Look, Charlie
I've heard Jr. whispering. And so if you've heard rumbling and I've heard whispering, then I mean, that's
confirmed sources. Those are two people that have confirmed this thing. So
yeah,
Charlie Weiss, you know, co-offensive coordinator at Ole Miss. He's a quarterback's coach. He's been under Lane for a little bit. You know, he was over at South Florida. He did some time at Atlantic when the Falcons. He was an offensive assistant here in 2015. So he has.
He's coming home.
He's familiar with the program, familiar with how Saban runs things. Obviously, a coaching legacy. We like the Patriots. You know, obviously, you know, Charlie Weiss, his father, longtime, very successful Patriots coach. We're not going to talk about his college career, but here's a guy. It fits perfectly into Nick Saban's system. It just seems it's a perfect fit. And this is what I'm hearing. These are what the important people are saying, is that Charlie Weiss Jr. is a slam dunk hire for offensive coordinator.
You know, it's the Untouchables. You know, they send one of yours to the hospital. You send one of theirs to the morgue. So they take our guy. We go take their guy. And, you know, that's why it's happening. So you heard it here first, folks. And if you want to share it with other blogs and make sure that they are aware of the Fog Advisory scoop.
New news out of Tuscaloosa. Charlie Weiss Jr. strongly considered for the offensive coordinator position at the University of Alabama. Weiss Jr. is the current co-offensive coordinator and quarterbacks coach under Lane Kiffin, spent some time in Alabama as an offensive analyst, and worked also under Steve Sarkisian when he was with the Atlanta Falcons. Strong whispers and strong rumblings about Charlie Weiss Jr.
Report: : Charlie Weiss Jr. to Alabama. That's the headline. So,
man, this is us. There it is. You heard it here first, everybody. So when it happens, you know, you know who to source.
Yeah, and you know who to sponsor. And so. Our unsourced, I mean, our enemy of the week, know your enemy of the week, is unsourced aggregate journalism. And then slightly related to that is like digging up like what happened with Brock Purdy, like digging up an alleged quote from Nick Saban that happened, you know, 6 years ago and treating it like a story, or digging up something that, you know, it was a passage of a book about Nick Saban that happened, that was published in 2013, and running it as a headline as if it's today. I hate those types of stories too. And they seem to be happening more and more and more.
I mean, they're content generators in the same way that, like, you know, we could go on Twitter right now and be like, who do you think should be the new offensive coordinator at the University of Alabama? Charlie Weiss Jr. ? And then just kind of see what happens and try to like get the clicks and stuff like that. And I understand it's a part of existing on the internet these days, and especially on Elon Musk's Twitter, where you need as much like silly engagement as possible. But
this resurfaced Family Guy clip has a lot to say about the Alabama offensive coordinator search.
Oh my God. Jesus Christ. Yes, this is it. That is my know your enemy of the week, of the month, of the year, of every single day of my life since the birth of the internet. So, it's fun. I get why people do it. It's fun. Charlie Weiss Jr. Like we're pushing it. We're pushing that narrative. We're going to have him on. We're going to see if we can get him on the show. We'll see if we can get him to confirm.
I am now hearing undercurrents of truth about Charlie Weiss Jr. to Alabama.
Yeah,
So, you know, next week, folks, I think we will talk a little bit about Alabama basketball, where we are currently ranked number 2 in the nation. We were going to chat a little bit about it today, but it feels like an hour is a good place to stop for this postseason edition of Fog Advisory. And from our good friends who are leaving the university on their own terms and who definitely are not being denied tenure and who are making the rounds of Fox News, Woke Tide Tonight.
Hashtag Woke Tide Tonight.
Roll Tide Tonight. Roll Tide Tonight.